Blog Talk Radio.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road, when along came a semi with a high end canvas covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Of travel I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Barranquilla, and Padilla. I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Boston, Charleston, Dayton, Louisiana, Washington, Houston, Kingston, Texas, County, Monterey, Faraday, Santa Fe, Tallapoosa, Glen Rock, Black Rock.
It's time for the next edition of the Riveting Jumble Justice Radio Show, broadcast worldwide on Blog Talk Radio. Turn up your speakers and listen closely, since you may be asked questions later. Keep your phone handy, since we encourage you to call in your comments to the host and guests on today's show. The listener call-in number is 347-996-5983. Once again, the number is 347-996-5983. You will also find the number on the top of the homepage for the Jumble Justice Radio Show. I'm Audrey, your technical and spiritual advisor for the radio broadcast. And now, without further delay, allow me to introduce your eminently qualified and inspiring host for Jumble Justice, Professor Keith Haley.
Thank you very much, Audrey. One more time, you guys connected. Did you see what we are up over 400 radio shows over like the past 8 or 9 years, I think, and you've been a part of every one of those, and that is just amazing. Thank you again, Audrey, for what you're doing. And we want to thank Johnny Cash, too, for that intro song he's been singing for years. And keep in mind, when he goes to all those places and when he sings that song in live appearances, he doesn't use a script. He's memorized those lyrics on his own. He needs no tips to help him know the next song. I think that's absolutely fast. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. We're back. I hope you're doing okay during this flu and cold season. I never talk about health, but I will. My usual January and February cold has arrived. It doesn't put me in bed, but it does make a little notice in my voice and coughing and things like that. Don't you hate to hear people talking about all that? By the way, if you look on television, I think there's some medicine being advertised for anything you can imagine, right? Right. It is really something. But anyway, we're glad you're here for the show tonight. And what we're going to do tonight is discuss some news, some issues and events and developments that are always difficult and sometimes humorous practice of criminal justice. And we've got some oddball stories tonight, as usual. We got more stories than we could cover in the show time that we have. But the show is dedicated to the work of our tireless police, courts, corrections, and juvenile justice professionals who protect us throughout the U.S. And by the way, crime in 2017 is down a little bit. Murders are up a little bit, but overall, violent crime is down. So that means something's working a little bit better, doesn't it? And I think there are people in the court system and maybe the prison system have figured out if you lock them up, they can't commit more crimes. Texas and Oklahoma understands that very well. You've heard me talk about that for a long time. But anyway, just keep in mind that you can do your own radio show. Any interest group, any person, any organization can broadcast live and streaming audio worldwide on the Blog Talk Radio Network, and that doesn't cost you anything. You can do 14 hours a week, and that's free. And if you want to do it in the prime time, I think that's like 5 to 8 or 9 or something like that. There is a little bit of charge, but any other time you could broadcast. Think about some night broadcasting. How about the night owls? You could broadcast to them at 2 a.m. Every day of the week free, absolutely free. So anyway, it's a great thing. It's one of the greatest things the Internet has ever brought to us was Blog Talk Radio. And you go in there and see all those different shows where people invest in all sorts of things. You'll really like them. Okay, let's go ahead and, Audrey, what do you think about doing our green joke first? Okay, let's go ahead. Let's go ahead and do our green joke first. Let's see if I can find that one. This one is crazier than one can even imagine, but I'll find it anyway. Eventually, we're looking for one about a study that was done at the University of Manchester. And they found a surprising global warming culprit. And guess what the culprit is? Sandwiches. In the first study of its kind, the researchers carried out in-depth audits of various sandwiches throughout their life cycles and found the triangular meals could be responsible for the equivalent annual carbon emissions of 8.6 million cars in Great Britain. I'm not kidding you. They are talking about, remember there was in 1762, or the story goes, the fourth Earl of Sandwich rocked the culinary world when he couldn't be bothered to leave the gambling table to eat and offer the servants to just stick some meat between two slices of bread. There you have a little fact about the history of sandwiches. But sandwiches are now hurting people, and they're recommending that people stop eating sandwiches. Not all sandwiches are as bad as other sandwiches, but that those that contain egg, bacon, and sausage are kept packaged and refrigerated until sold, all of which add up to 1,441 grams or 3.8 pounds of carbon dioxide equivalent. I'm not kidding you. You think this is a joke? This is a study. I hope we didn't pay for that one. But thank you for paying your taxes for similar stupid studies. Excuse me. Oh, I'm sorry. But so I want you, ladies and gentlemen, listeners of the show, to make a pledge that you are going to stop eating sandwiches. And if you'll do that, it'll be. This research was published, by the way, in the Journal of Sustainable Production and Consumption. I never read that journal. Do you, Audrey? Audrey might, well, Audrey's probably read it before. She's read everything. Okay, let's go ahead and do our blonde joke for tonight. We have one of those too. Remember that? And keep in mind, these are always blonde males. Let's see if we can find that site. What in the world happened to that? Oh my gosh, the blonde joke. Yeah, here we go. A blonde, keep in mind, this is a guy. He crashed his helicopter. Police officer showed up at the scene of the crash and asked him what happened. He says it got cold. So what did I do? I turned off the fan. All right. Doing my time in the Marines, I respect the pilots, of course, but that's the thing that I just liked the most was flying in a helicopter. It just didn't seem right. But anyway, let's go ahead and get started on some news. And we certainly have some tonight. Let's start with, how do you like pit bull stories? No, I better not do that. Oh, I will do it. Violent crime is down. I already told you that a little bit. Artificial intelligence now is now figuring out the jail time for convicted offenders. Cleveland News, the century-old process of releasing defendants on bail along the province of judicial discretion is getting a major assist, courtesy of artificial intelligence. I won't go into detail, but these inmates now come out, and their trial's over, they're convicted, and they're taking up these algorithms made up about these inmates, and they're using those to decide what they get. You've noticed in sports broadcasting, haven't you? Remember when you listened, even on television, but particularly radio, when you listen to a, you know, an NFL ball game, a college ball game, or whatever, you had people who had such insight, they could describe what's going on in the game and make you feel like you were there. I think that was their code. You know, we want you to be here at the game. Now what do they do? They must have 25 people at each game working on computers, flopping spreadsheets in the faces of the announcers, and all you hear is, Joey, in 1917 or 2017, he took three showers and he scored one touchdown and his shirt got torn. I mean, on and on and on and on. And then, of course, we also film what? The performance after each play. I tackle somebody and now I have to do some jive act in order to get the cameras to look at me after the play. And a lot of people are getting turned off by that, and I'm one of those. I remember they had Pete Rose come in and do a little bit of a ball game here several years back, just letting broadcast two innings of a ball. You felt like you were there. This was on radio. And now our announcers are very good at reading spreadsheets. Oh, my. Okay, we were now going to do something in Oklahoma City. Republican lawmakers pushing to add Oklahoma to the list of states in which chemical castration is an option for certain sex offenders, although it's rarely used. This is Senate, State Representative Rick West. He's a first-term lawmaker from Heavener, Oklahoma. He filed the bill at the request of a constituent and that he fully intends to push it for its passage. In other words, these sex offenders who can't stop sex offending, we're going to do something to them that perhaps biologically, mentally, will stop them from doing that. And prisons are loaded with, my Lord, with sex offenders. Sometimes it takes too long to get them. But anyway, that's that one. Let's go now and see a bit. Yeah, you don't want to hear about a bike velodrome in Detroit right now. sexual assaults, chemical, male backlash, man wants. Oh, here's a man who's fighting for his rights. And this is in the state of Indiana, in Terre Haute. He wants to have the right. He was picked up. He made a gesture, commonly known as giving the finger, to a police officer, and who had stopped another motorist along US 41. He claims just prior to the incident, he was cut off in traffic by Ames, who was pursuing another motorist. He gave the gesture, and they pulled him over and ticketed him for provocation. In other words, he violated a law. It's a Class C infraction. And he wants to take this to the highest court. He said it's his First Amendment right to give you, I, or police officers, anyone you want, the finger. We'll have to see how that one turns out. Guess what's going on in London? Remember the city that took on immigrant after immigrant after immigrant after immigrant? Now there's all kinds of murder cases in London, that type of thing. So now we have TMI, and TMI is a private police organization. And what they're doing is they're people that have money can get a house, they'll have a house and they'll have private police protection because the other people in London, remember they even had safe areas in London where they wouldn't allow the British cops, the London police to go into the area where the immigrants lived. Can you believe that? So now you can hire the private agency, TMI, and it's run by former British police officers and it's doing very well. My local Bobby was launched, that's what MOB stands for, last year and covers up to 250 houses in Belgravia, Mayfair, and Kensington. And they shell out £200 a month. They're given a meet and greet service by car or tube and have a hotline straight to their officer who can respond in 5 minutes. That sounds like pretty good stuff, doesn't it? The managing director is David McKelvey, and he's a retired Scotland Yard detective. And private policing's not new. We have places, you know, if you went to Plano, Texas, they had several communities that were closed gate. They're all over the United States, and they have their own police and security unit. And guess what? Burglaries are almost non-existent. Okay. Let me see what we got on this one. We did find out again that Ohio's lethal injection method is legal. 6 U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in Cincinnati says two inmates challenging the three-drug method have proven the process posed a non-acceptable risk of pain and suffering. They have not proved. So the court upheld those, and we finally got some guy scheduled for execution. He's scheduled to die on February 13th for killing a man in Cincinnati in what year would you guess, Audrey? Oh, you saw my notes. 1997. That's 1997, 2007, 2017. He's been waiting to be executed for 20 years. Now they're finally going to do it. By the way, I don't like that idea. If it's taken that long to execute the man, you ought to let him live. That's the way I look at it. That's longer explanation I got time for, but we'll take a look at that. Here's a guy that did good. This guy was driving a blue Hyundai, and he comes into the Hyundai, and he comes into the bank parking lot, and he's overdosed. And guess what he did? He drove up to the window, the drive-thru window of a bank, and he asked for burritos. And when they came out of the bank, when they called the police, he was passed out in the car. But don't quote me on that. But he was arrested after field sobriety test, and he was strongly impaired. And a search of his car turned up Xanax and OxyContin pills, for which he had a prescription. But anyway, he thought you could get burritos out of it. Hey, that's an idea. Maybe a bank could draw more business if you got, you know, if you got your check cashed and got some cash, and you also got some burritos. Oh, my. And Philadelphia wants to become the first United States city to allow supervised drugs injection sites as a way to combat the opioid epidemic. They're seeking outside operators to establish one or more of these in the city. Can you believe that? Now you'll be able to go to a site, get your opioid drug dose, however you take them. I don't even know. Do you eat them? Do you chew them? Get a punch in the arm or whatever it is? But they're going to do that. No U.S. city has established at the site, though Seattle has set aside $1.3 million to create a safe injection site. What in the world has happened to how many arguments against that can you make? Maybe there's one or two for it. I don't know, but that is just incredible to me. You feel sorry for this lady. She gets out of church on Sunday, and she's in her car in Chicago. Oh, they wouldn't have carjacking in Chicago, would they? Yeah, they would. And the guy carjacks her, and she couldn't believe it. She's parked next to a playground at St. John's Lutheran Church, waiting to pick up her grandkids. And this car pulled up in front of her, and a guy gets out. Another guy gets out and carjacks her. Unbelievable. Guess what? Organ transplant rate is way up. And you know what's causing it? The high overdose deaths from opioids. In other words, when people die of the opioids, which many are dying from, it's just terrible. We had 4,329 fatal overdoses in Ohio in 2016, one state. And of course, their organs are given away, some of them. And now they can get organs that they've needed, but they're getting them because those addicted to opioids are dying at an unprecedented rate in our country. I don't think I want to go on that pit bull story, but anyway, be careful if you're around a pit bull, even if you own one. Remember last week I talked about the woman who had this dog for years, and then he finally killed her? Unbelievable. The high-speed train wreck, you heard about that. Two people died in Florida. We just had another one. Where was that, in Pennsylvania or Virginia? And the one we just had, the train was on the wrong track. It was an Amtrak hits a CVX, and two people, I think, more than that, have died in that particular wreck. But anyway, when you're crossing a railroad track, be careful. There is no safe spot. Well, I think that's enough. We've had a green tip, right? Yes. Stop eating sandwiches. I can hear some of you munching right now while you're listening to my show. You need to stop in order to save the planet. Okay. We can save the planet. We really can. I think so. Yeah. Yes, we can. Okay, what we're going to do tonight, I'd like to inform you about websites and sources on the internet you don't know much about. But there's some really good ones on there. One of those I wanted to talk about was American Rhetoric. Have you ever looked at that site? I'm just going to be very brief. Go to American Rhetoric and you can hear speeches, audio, of people from all over the place, from 100 years ago to now to whatever. And it's just it's a wonderful site. It's called American Rhetoric. And you want to hear somebody you've heard people talk about for centuries, and or not centuries, but for decades, and then you want to hear this person actually say it, talk it, but you got it. You can go to American Rhetoric. And you already know about Accurate Radio, which has many genres of music. You put it on, there's almost no advertising. The sound quality is unbelievable. The picturesque development of the website is absolutely beautiful. And take a look at that if you've never done it. ACCU Radio.com. So what we're going to do tonight, one of those sites I was telling you about, we're going to go to archive.org, and then we're going to go to the radio show portion. If you go to archive.org, you just keep scrolling down. You can't believe the stuff that just keeps coming up. But Crime Classics is one that for a number of years had radio shows about true crime. I think we did the one on Abraham Lincoln. And they did these things like once a week. And we're going to play tonight a show called The Axe and the Druk Factory. And these are all real, true crime stories. And I think you'll really enjoy these. Remember the days, well, you're not old enough, but if you remember the days of radio, the people on radio could really act, could really talk, could really impersonate, and you felt like you were there. Well, you'll get that tonight on Crime Classics. So give me time to get this set up, and we'll let you listen to Crime Classics show. And there are many, many others on the site if you haven't had a chance to hear it. So hold on just a second. Okay, here we go with The Axe and the Druk Family.
Good evening. This is Crime Classics. I am Thomas Highland. I'm going to tell you another true crime story. Listen. A man writing. Listen closely because it's a quiet sound, an intimate sound. The year is 1795, and the man who is doing this quiet, intimate thing is named Peter Druk. He is writing his will, making with goose quill and parchment his bequest to his children. When he is done, unknowingly, he will have made certain the death of his two sons. And now he is done. Now he has made certain. And tonight, my report to you on the Axe and the Druk family, how they fared. Crime Classics, a series of true crime stories, taken from the records and newspapers of every land from every time. Your host each week, Mr. Thomas Highland, connoisseur of crime, student of violence, and teller of murders. Now, once again, Thomas Highland.
Mm-hmm.
place is Heidelberg Township, Dauphin County, in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. During the closing years of the 18th century, Heidelberg snuggled against the bend of the Susquehanna. Its chief product was people, who were sent downstream to Harrisburg and overland to Philadelphia. So great was the margin of export over import that I can no longer locate Heidelberg Township on a very good map of Pennsylvania. However, during the time that it flourished, it was noted chiefly for its rocks, which were used all over the county to build churches, sheds, barns, and gravestones. The Groot family lived in a stone house, and Peter Groot was so wealthy that he was buried in a coffin imported from Bavaria, which was decorated with cherubs painted on porcelain and other sad scenes. His shroud was of genuine black Westphalian lace. His lawyer was of 100% Saxony stock and came from Philadelphia. And to my daughter Elizabeth, I, Peter Groot, do will and bequeath the sum of £1,000. However, the sums I have already advanced to her in the amount of £800 shall be considered a part of this legacy. And to my sons, Francis and Peter, I leave the residue of my estate. But in the event of the death of either of my sons, without his... And his daughter Elizabeth, pure product of Heidelberg Township, was moved.
Some father I had, to leave to his own true daughter a measly £200.
You have done a deception to me.
Deception how?
To tell me you were the favorite of the old man's children and would inherit the money. This is deception, to get me to be the husband of you.
John.
What?
I did not mean to deceive you.
Get thee away.
I begged you to believe me. Get me from the chair and take my hand.
The likes of you, a spouse to the likes of me.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
I said it, Elizabeth. Get thee away.
That vile man, that father to me, to have done this to his daughter. But I have to wait until the death of my brothers to get to his wealth. That I have to wait until the death of my brothers to get to his wealth. That I have to wait until the death of my brothers.
Yes, yes, I heard it.
That as each one of them would die, I would get £500.
Yes, yes, I heard it. Elizabeth.
What, husband?
How well do you love your brothers?
Francis is the oldest, and I can recall one day at the quarry when he struck me with a stone, this scar.
And the younger one?
Who was named for my father, and as cruel as my father, and who became my father's favorite in my stead. Who once called me a name I shall never forget.
Were they to die?
I insisted to them, I should we? In your arms, husband. And you would make me smile again.
Smile now.
In your arms?
Yes.
John and Elizabeth Power, Pennsylvanian lovers. He, a stonemason who had more epitaphs at the tip of his chisel than any stonemason in the county. She, noted for her scars and her elderberry jelly. The old man just growing chill in his coffin from Bavaria. And John and Elizabeth, daughter and son-in-law, were getting ready to lay the rest of the family beside him.
I think we should start with the younger one first.
Why, whatever are you talking about?
He's better off dead than alive, anyhow.
Why, whatever are you talking about? Put me down. Put me down.
John put Elizabeth down and got on his horse. He rode to Harrisburg at a clip which can only be described as furious. Now, in Harrisburg, there lived a friend of his, an elderly gentleman who distilled things and bottled them. It is said that this gentleman could do a thing with toadstools and snake venom that you wouldn't believe.
The gentleman, whose name is recorded in state annals as Uncle Hess der Kleine, was finally ducked in a pond for 12 minutes by the authorities. Well, John bought a few ounces of an essence from Uncle Hess and rode back to Heidelberg Township. And the next day, in the stone quarry, this is what happened.
And how is your brother Francis these days, Peter, lad?
See much of him these days.
He's busy counting his money, I suppose, and yours.
He is a farmer. He farms.
Question, lad.
Aye, John.
Have you had the fancies lately?
How do you know about that?
Your sister, lad. She told me. Since a lad, you have been seeing strangies and ghosties and whatnot.
And what of it?
Nothing, lad. Nothing.
It is true that I have been visited.
And me, too. And last week, I was lying beneath the stars near the barn. There was a wave, and I look about me. Such a beautiful fancy she was. And she was crying.
Go on. Go on, John.
Of such beauty. And I reached out my hands to her, and her image was smoke.
Wondrous.
I can see her any time I wish it.
How? Oh.
I have a thing here, a potion, a small bottle of it, prepared specially to lie under the stars to see this wondrous, beautiful lady.
Was she indeed so beautiful?
I am unschooled. I have not the words for her beauty.
Please.
What, lad?
Give me of that vial. Let me taste.
She stirs your imagination, lad.
Yes, oh yes.
You can almost see her in your mind now, can you not?
Even while you talk, I try to imagine her. Please, give me of the vial.
Here, drink it.
Yes.
All of it. Good, lad. Tonight, lie down under the stars and see what will happen to you.
Thank you, John.
The bottle is good no longer. Throw it away, lad. Poor lad. 18 years old and given to fancies. Now, all of us know that many lads of 18, even today, are given to fancies. But young Peter Droop was very rich and lived in Pennsylvania. And it was a rare moment indeed when he wasn't beginning or ending a fancy. And true, this, we must remember, was the era of potions to conjure up most anything, from rain to a lady made of smoke. So, young Peter Droop had everything going for him that night. Youth, imagination, and potion. He went out under the stars and lay down near the barn, just like his brother-in-law told him to do. What happened then may be described as a good night in the country gone to waste.
Oh, my stomach. My stomach.
That rooster crowing really upset schedules in old Heidelberg Township that night. People and animals looked out of the window and wondered what ailed that rooster anyhow. It was too early to get out of bed and too late to go back to sleep, so they gave ear to the commotion. Through the din rose the wails of Peter Droop, who had seen no fancies but was writhing with a terrible ache in his stomach. His brother Francis brought him back to the house and applied an old Pennsylvania poultice, which relieved the lad no end. So, the next morning, in the stone quarry...
And all that happened, John, was an ache right here. A grievous ache.
Poor lad. Lad.
Yes?
When you lay yourself down under the stars, which way were you facing?
Toward the east. Toward Bruder Gansel's farm.
I should have told you.
I did it wrong.
No, it is my fault. You faced the wrong way. However, come here. Walk with me. Sit yourself down here by this pile of rocks.
Here?
To your left a wee bit. Very good. Now close your eyes and think hard.
Of what?
of beautiful things. Silently, I will say a magical thing, and I will go from you a little and behind you. Peter, keep closed your eyes.
Say it. Say the magical thing.
Aye, right now. And all of you, the last root is buried beneath the rock. He is dead.
No. No, I am not. This ride of rock should not touch me. I heard this sound and I leaped. And I...
What a relief it is to me. Oh, how happy I am.
But why have we come here, John, to the loft of the barn?
I have another way to show you the fancy.
How?
This rope I have here tied to the rafter. Place it about your neck.
Very well. Do not let me fall, for the rope is not long enough to reach the floor.
Is the rope tight enough about your neck now, lad?
Tight enough? For what?
For this?
John? The rope broke, John. Please don't be frightened. I'm not hurt. I'm not hurt at all.
And as long as Peter stayed alive, John couldn't collect any of the legacy, which is why John sat in the hayloft, head in hand, and pondered. Then John thought about an axe, and he pondered no more. Crime Classics, and your host, Thomas Highland. The Patrolman Kirk reported in from Box 23 at 1:42, on time to the minute. His next call was to come from Post 7. He never made it. When they finally found him, he had been shot to death. Was it suicide or murder? The steady, detailed work the real police do will again be evident on CBS Radio's 21st Precinct tomorrow evening as the world's largest, the case of Patrolman Kirk and Post 7. 21st Precinct is podcast on most of these same stations. Be at Post 7 tomorrow. And now once again, Thomas Highland and the second act of Crime Classic, and his report to you on the Axe and the Druk family, how they fared. Notes about Pennsylvania as it neared the end of the 18th century. It was already a state to be reckoned with. General Washington had camped there during the winter of 1777-78 at a place known as Valley Forge. In the town of Chester, Mad Anthony Wayne drilled his troops in an unusual manner in the courthouse square. The western part of the state was rife with forests, game, trout streams, and beneath it, the silent flow of oil. To be discovered 50 years later in Titusville, of all places. A dominion of wealth, discovered and as yet undiscovered, of history, made and as yet unmade. To prove my point, a person by the name of Barbara Fritchie, who was born in Old Heidelberg Township, had not quite yet been born. But across the street from the house where Barbara would first see the light of day, where her grubby little fingers would reach for her first needle, across the street, live John and Elizabeth Hower, man and wife. As is our prerogative, let's look in on them.
The rope broke.
What a pity.
It seems I can't kill him. Something always goes wrong.
You always were a hasty man, ruining things.
In the barn this morning, I did everything.
of my brothers still live.
I thought of something.
Both of my brothers still live. And both of my brothers still live.
Would you listen, spouse?
I
thought of an axe.
And what did you think of an axe?
How it can smash things.
What things?
Tables.
And cups.
Chairs.
And chicken.
And skulls.
And skulls. And husband?
What?
Will you do it?
It will be done.
By whom? By you?
By a man I know and his friend.
And after it's done, what shall I have?
You will have no brothers.
And in their stead?
Money.
Husband.
Yes?
Lift me. Lift me. Spin me around.
To talk with me.
Aye. Where's your friend Patrick?
There's to talk money in it.
Aye.
Before or after the key?
A little before and much after.
Patrick. Money in it.
Huh?
John Harrell.
Aye.
Come into here.
Good evening to you, Patrick.
Now, John Harrell, speak to the both of us.
My wife's brothers are alive. If they were to die, my dear wife would receive all of their money.
And is this the end of it?
A very great sum of money.
And
this axe I have brought
cuts deep.
Well, Patrick?
Well, John Howard? Wait. It is enough for now. Patrick, get out of bed, man.
There were frontiers in those days. As a matter of fact, our country was more frontier than anything else. And the people, those who survived, were the fittest. I would like to describe two fit people of the time. Charles McManus.
Which is my name. I am 42 years old. I stand 6 inches above 5 feet, and my weight is close to 200 pounds. Once in Killarney, I killed a man with my fist. I fled to America. In New York, I killed again with my fist. I fled to the backwoods of Pennsylvania.
Patrick Donegan.
That's me. I'm much too slight to kill with my fist. I must have steel in my hand. There was a woman in Donegal County. Her death brought me here, where I am now.
Very fit persons indeed. Killers and attuned to the wilderness. They moved quietly.
Thank you.
vanishing.
Now we can go.
Elizabeth, and they brought him and his wife to the house where Peter and Francis Duke were lying. Elizabeth fell down upon the floor and wept bitterly. John sat down and made no remark. And this is the tableau, 1 hour after the murder had been committed. And the townspeople had found that nothing had been plundered from the house, and the townspeople knew that only John and Elizabeth would profit from the death of the brother. And an axe had been found. And a townsman knew it to be the axe of John Hower. Then John Hower made a remark.
I did not do it.
Then they asked him, who did do it?
Two murderers.
Two, they asked him. How do you know it was two, John?
I hired them.
Life has been governed by the lust for money. Only love and sweet solicitude for my husband. If it has been my husband's immodesty to have committed murder, I do love him still.
I committed no murder. He committed no murder, he says. He gave me an axe. He gave me money. Turned them and said, do your dirty work yourself. Didn't I, Patrick?
As sure as you're born, I heard you refuse the man distinct. And I heard him muttering that he'd do it himself.
Gentlemen of the jury, as your judge, I now charge you. The murder of Peter and Francis Drute rouses the indignation of the county. Its atrocity is unequaled by anything of the kind hitherto known in Pennsylvania. The execution of the murders was as horrid as the motives were base and groveling. The keenest sensation must arise in the minds of all good men and worthy.
The judge then went into particular detail of all the evidence that had been given and committed the case to the jury at 4 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. At 7 o'clock in the evening, they returned a verdict. John Hower, guilty. Charles McManus, guilty. Dunnigan, guilty. Elizabeth Hower, not guilty.
I'm pleased. I'm so pleased. Goodbye, my husband.
The guilty were all of them hanged on Saturday, July 14th, 1798. Elizabeth Hower mourned for a respectable interval, then married again to one Obed Fanistock. The Fanistocks moved to Maryland, to the growing community of Cumberland, where they bought a house and a well and sold water to settlers moving west. And it all happened in old Heidelberg Township, which I can no longer find on the map.
Thomas Highland will tell you about next week's crime classic. The Drute Family, tonight's crime classic, was adapted from the original court reports and newspaper accounts by Morton Fine and David Friedkin. The music was composed and conducted by Bernard Herrmann, and the program is produced and directed by Elliot Lewis. Thomas Highland is portrayed on radio by Lou Merrill. In tonight's story, Mary Jane Croft was heard as Elizabeth and Clayton Post as John. Featured in the cast were Herb Butterfield, Sam Edwards, Paul Frees, and Charles Davis. George Wall speaking.
Okay, kind of interesting, isn't it? There are years worth. Those are CBS productions, by the way. And when you go to archive.org and start arrowing down, you can, or you can put in the search box crime classics, you'll get these true crime stories, and some of them are very, very interesting. But what it does for folks that grew up with television and virtually no radio other than music and some news once in a while, but what it does, it gets you a chance to use your imagination to picture in your mind what's going on based on the descriptions of these very articulate commentators. So and actors, by the way. And I think you'd really enjoy it. So I think that's it for tonight. And hope you get your cold better if you're having one, January and February. And we'll see you next week. And I think what we'll do in the meantime is have the Ohio Coalition Against Firearms tell us what they think about carrying firearms for self-defense.
Carrying concealed handguns in Ohio? It's a deadly idea. A message from the Ohio Coalition Against Gun Violence.
The coalition folks really need to talk to people who saved their lives because they had a gun either carrying it or at home. Okay, aside from all that, that's a different argument. We're going to ask Vera Lynn to sign us off as we usually do on every show. We'll meet again.
We'll meet again. Don't know when, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day. Keep smiling through, just like you always do, till the blue skies drive the dark clouds far away. So will you please say hello to the folks that I know, tell them I won't be long. They'll be happy to know that as you saw me go, I was singing this song. We'll meet again. Don't know when, don't know when, lovely day.